Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Views on View. I am your host, Lindsay Wardell. With me today is Justin Schrader.
Hi.
Hey, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Hey, folks, this is Charles Maxwood, and over the last few years, I've gotten to know a lot of great people within the Microsoft community, and specifically in the .NET area. One of our guests from JavaScript Jabber, Sean Claybo, actually reached out to me and said he wanted to start a show on .NET, and there are a ton of people out there that I feel like sometimes get neglected in the .NET space. So if you're one of those folks, you've been listening to maybe one or two of the other .NET-focused or Microsoft-focused podcasts for a while and thought, well, where's the devchat.tv style podcast for me in .NET? You can find it. It's at adventuresin.net. .NET is spelled out, D-O-T-N-E-T. Adventuresin.net.com. Go check it out today.
For those who aren't aware of who you are and how awesome you are, could you introduce yourself and kind of explain how you got into programming?
Yeah, sure. So my name's Justin Schrader. Probably like most of the people listening to your podcast, I'm a software engineer, I guess. I don't know. Those terms are kind of confusing. Some people call them web developers. I think engineer sounds like slightly more glorified, so I'm going to go with that term.
I like it.
Got into programming. I'm 32 this year, which means I just marked 20 years of doing web development. I started roughly when I was 12. So it's just kind of been a long, long, slow burn. Used to love doing it as a kid. And I got like a little scholarship to college for some website I had built. And so I decided that I must know enough about this thing to not do it in college. So I like put it down and was like, I can always come back to that later, right? And I went and actually became a pilot for several years and like had a brief career flying planes. And then when I got married, I decided this is like literally the worst possible career you could ever have as a spouse. So I'm going to go back to that old childhood passion of programming. So that was about 8 years ago now. So I've been doing this like, you know, full time professionally for about 8 years. Yeah. And Vue has been part of that story since like maybe right after Vue 2 came out, sometime in there. I used to dabble with React and, you know, obviously like everybody else, the jQueries of the world and all of that stuff. But yeah, once I got onto Vue, I kind of haven't looked back too much. I still occasionally pick up React projects, but the quality of life for a Vue developer is just significantly better, in my opinion. I mean, hey, it's a Vue podcast, right? So I can say that.
You can say anything you want like that. Yeah. Awesome.
I was going to say now I am a partner at an agency called Braid. But the reason I'm here talking to you is because of a library that I authored recently called Vue Formulate, which is trying to be like a comprehensive form building library that's really easy to pick up and you can actually use it on a daily basis without, you know, feeling guilty about it. So that's me.
Cool. I'm curious, before we dive into Vue Formulate, you started around when you were 12 and you said it's about 20 years. Were you primarily just HTML, CSS at the time? Did you dive into the back end at all?
So yeah, right when I started, it was a, you know, HTML only world, very inline attributes. All your styling is inline attributes. And then I decided at one summer, I came home. This is when I was a high schooler and was like, this summer, I'm going to learn this whole CSS thing and I'm going to learn a backend language and I'm going to learn SQL. And so I just like locked myself in my room and learned all of those tools. And so, yeah, my introduction to backend was 2003, 2004. It was still relatively early days when you actually look at the timeline of those languages. You know, PHP hadn't been around that much before that. So yeah, I mean, I would consider myself full stack. I've done PHP and obviously a lot of Node nowadays and some Java in there too, actually. Although that was years ago. I'm sure it's dramatically different since you said you work on that.
Yeah, Java is definitely a thing. not my favorite.
It is a whole can of worms, isn't it?
Yeah. But again, luckily we're a Vue podcast, so we don't need to worry about how.
We're a Vue podcast.
Yeah, it's interesting. We had a similar arc there. I started around 12 or 13 in that same time period,
awesome, yeah,
working with HTML. By the suggestion of a math teacher, I started learning CSS and playing with divs and spans instead of just doing table layouts. And then I built a community website that would eventually be PHP and MySQL.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
So,
yeah, I mean, I held off even like adopting a framework forever because there, you know, those early days, there hardly were any. you know, there hardly were any frameworks or anything like that. And finally, somebody talked me into using CodeIgniter. And so I used CodeIgniter for several projects. And then it just became really apparent that it was Ellis Labs that made that, but they were starting to abandon that PHP framework. And I started bouncing around on IRC channels being like, well, what do I do? Like, I can tell this is dying. I don't want to be on a dying ship. And somebody was like, hey, there's this like totally unknown project that you might want to check out called Laravel. It like, maybe it's going to be like the next thing. We're not really sure, but it seems cool. It looks a lot like .NET. I'm like, I don't know .NET. That sounds terrible. So, I mean, like a lot of people, that's ultimately what got me into Vue was this kind of Laravel connection, which is so weird. It's so weird how many people were ushered into Vue through a backend framework, but it is the way it is.
Yeah, and that's part of why I ask about backend. We hear a lot of that from the guests that we have. They came in from the Laravel community into Vue from PHP.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, for me, it was a breath of fresh air because I had been doing React paired with other backends. And I was not like, I didn't hate React. I thought it was a tremendous leap forward from what we were doing before. But it also felt really dogmatic about its approach to things. You know, like how, even to this day, there are just like vast numbers of features of Vue that are missing in React. And it's not that you can't do them in React. It's that they are objectionable within that ecosystem. So they have a really strong pattern of higher order components, where in Vue, that's a much weaker pattern because we have things like plugins, which really don't exist. So being able to like write your software the way you want it to seems more possible in the Vue ecosystem. You don't have to adapt your patterns quite as much to the pattern of the framework, which is a positive and definitely a negative as well. But that's what ultimately won me over.
Very cool. Awesome. So at this point, let's move forward with our topic for the day, which is Vue Formulate. And I'll let you describe it, and then I've got some questions around it.
Totally. So Vue Formulate is a Vue plugin that I started writing. It's like a long journey. I originally wrote a plugin to basically get form input data into Vuex. And I thought that this was like a real problem. I saw a lot of people trying to get data into Vuex, and I kept wanting to do it. And so I wrote this thing that allowed you to just easily create a form input element. You could tell it what type it was. And then it would kind of like magically bind itself to getters and setters, mutations in Vuex. Mm-hmm. And we actually shipped that on several production products, and we loved it, except for the Vuex part of it. Which was the whole point of writing it. And the reason we loved it is that it came with like such an easy API to use when you are actually composing the form. So as you were writing the form, you would just say, okay, I want a form element and I want it to be a text. I want it to be a checkbox. I want it to be a whatever. And you didn't have to like, you know, go look at the Vuefy documentation or whatever framework you were choosing, because it mapped really closely to HTML. I kind of like to say that it like smooths out the inconsistencies in HTML. You know, if you want a text area, the markup for a text area is actually different than for an input or for a select list or something like that. And so while those inconsistencies are there for good reason in HTML, this basically allows you to have your cake and eat it too. It kind of keeps a really constant API across the board. And so when we decided to like revisit this whole concept of Formulate, we said, well, let's throw that whole Vuex thing in the trash. Not that Vuex is trash. Vuex is great. But let's put that binding in the trash. And instead, let's focus on creating like a really elegant way to compose library or form elements. And when I say we, I'm talking about me and some of the other guys that I was working with at the time at Braid. And so the result is Vue Formulate 2.0. It technically is under the term 2.0, even though really only released it publicly March. I think maybe March. It has not been very long. It's only been a matter of a few months. So yeah, we put it out there in March, and basically the selling point is you've got only two components that you need to learn. There's a formulate input and then a formulate form. And all of your inputs are composed with those two elements. So all of your inputs are formulate inputs, and then you can choose to wrap those inputs in a formulate form, but it's not a requirement. So if you just want to have a text field on there for some reason, just put it on there. And then it allows you to, you know, very easily vmodel. You can listen to events on it just like you would a standard one, but it comes kind of with a turbocharged prop API. So it's we call it a component first API, which means your, like, a lot of your configuration and stuff like that is baked into the initial default components out of the box. And so if you want to do things like put a label on the field, you just add a label prop and you get a label element rendered with it, with a proper ID that's binding the two together for things like accessibility. So those kinds of things get to come out of the box. But then it goes a little bit further because we have a validation library that's baked into the system. So if you want to validate that input on the front end, you just add a prop that says validation and you can type out your validation rules. Kind of this, it's almost like a Laravel-esque kind of syntax. But the default state is that it'll take care of rendering your errors for you, doing the validation for you, putting out error messages that are even internationalized. I think we've got like, it's been, the messages have been translated into like 12 or 13 languages now. So yeah, so you don't have to, like there's a lot of great libraries for forms in the Vue ecosystem, but I typically see they're either very high level, so you're talking like a Vuetify, or very low level, like a Vvalidate or something like that, where it's like you provide everything, we will validate the form field. And this is, it's not the only one, but it's one of the only ones that I'm aware of where it's kind of like, we're not a UI library at all. Right. We don't even ship with styles. We have a default theme if you want to use it, but we don't even ship with styles. And also we're not, we actually don't even want you to write scope slots. So that's not the preferred way of using it, which is, I think, pretty unique. Scope slots is like the golden child in the Vue ecosystem for extensibility. And
it's kind of the thing to do right now.
It's the thing to do. We have tons of slots. Don't get me wrong. Like, you can use slots all day long if you want. But we actually want to dissuade people from using it that way because it leads to like a pretty obtuse form. In the way, like when you actually go and like look at your template for a given form, it gets kind of hard to read. You know, you've got all these, you know, injection. I mean, it's better than maybe like render props in React, but it's still pretty verbose. And so what often will happen is people will, you know, compose their scope slots the way they want, and then they'll wrap that in a higher order component. That'll be the thing that they use in their API. But from our perspective, that comes with a number of downsides. You've got a whole bunch of components now for your forms that you got to remember about. You have to, in those higher order components, you need to remember to like pass the bindings back down through to the child. So if you've got a formulate input inside of a higher order component, you have to remember that you got to pass all those props through. And the list of props might change over time. So you could do some sort of a dynamic binding situation, but it's just like one more step in there. And then when it comes to things like form generation, which is another thing that Vueformulate tackles, it kind of throws a wrench in that whole system too, because you have an inconsistent schema for how you're going to be rendering your inputs. So yeah, I'm going on a deep dive here, I suppose, on slots at this point, but
you're good.
This is actually a pretty unique thing, I think, about Vueformulate. So what we came up with as an alternative to this, because we do want to be super customizable, is this concept of slot components. And I don't know if anybody else out there does this or has thought about this, but the way that we talk about slot components is a slot component is basically like the default inside of a slot. So if you imagine you have a slot for, you know, like your default slot or something, and you just got the slot tag inside of a component, you can optionally replace what the default is. So normally when you define like a slot inside of it, you can write whatever will render there if somebody doesn't define the slot in the parent, you know, mm-hmm. And that's kind of like the default rendering of that area. So what we let you do is define what goes inside of that default. So for example, like the label on all of the inputs across ViewFormulate, let's say you build a whole site with ViewFormulate and somebody comes along, your boss comes along and says, it'd be really nice to have a tooltip on the labels across the board. It's like, well, shoot, ViewFormulate doesn't support that. What are we going to do? And even if ViewFormulate did support that and all it did was support slots, then you would have to go through and add that slot to every instance of an input or wrap it in a higher order component, get all the pass-throughs working, and then go implement that higher order component everywhere throughout. So instead, what we can do with a slot component is you write a component for the label that takes a big context object, which is defined in the documentation, has all of the information about what goes into actually making one of these inputs render. Things like, you know, what's the label, what's the validation state, all of that kind of stuff. And then, so, and then you can define, you receive that as a prop, and then you also receive any additional props you want to receive from the top level. So in the tooltip example, you could say, hey, I would like my component to receive a prop called tooltip text. And then you would write this component that would be the label, and you just tell ViewFormulate, hey, when you render a label, I want you to use my component instead. And when you do that, then your component will become the default label for all Formulate inputs across the board. You can still override that then too with a scope slot if you need to in your one instance or whatever. That's kind of a unique thing, I think, is like we want you to use scope slots whenever you need to do like an instance by instance override instead of a, you know, like a global override for the whole application.
So in a way, you're almost building your own input component, right? Because if you need to, you can take all these different pieces that you've made yourself, put it together, just the overrides that you want, and then ViewFormulate handles the rest.
That's right. Yeah. So like the question would be obvious, like, why would you bother using ViewFormulate if you're just going to write your own label components anyway? And it's like, well, because there's a lot of other stuff there, right? There's like validation, you know, there's repeating field groups, there's, you know, multi-languages, there's form generation, there's a lot of other stuff that makes it worth it. But yeah, you get to replace any piece and part that you want in order to create your own library. Yeah. So, I mean, that's the like really high level of why it's great. I think it's great, obviously. And it's, you know, like I said, it's pretty new since March. And so we kind of threw it out there. And I don't know, I had released a lot of open source stuff in the past, but it was always like relatively like small potatoes and mostly just like me and whatever I was writing. like terrible documentation. And so on this one, we decided like, well, let's actually like write some legit docs for this and like see if anybody else uses it. And amazingly, people actually found this really useful and it started kind of catching on. So, I mean, it's still a small player compared to a lot of the other libraries that are out there, but I think we might have just passed like 1,100 stars, which feels good for a few months in now.
Yeah, so. It looks like you've got 1,101 stars.
And one star.
And one.
Yeah, every star matters.
It does. And I'll admit, I'm one of those people that would love to use this. I started a project in April that was using Tailwind. And one of the main issues I was running into, because it's, you know, it's an application for business. Primary use is entering data. Secondary use is then reading the data, but you got to put it in the data in the first place. And I was just using Tailwind in my own custom elements and everything. And it's just, this is frustrating. This is complex. You need to add all of these different pieces. And luckily I wasn't worrying about internationalization. It's for a single small business, a single language, but there does still need to be validation. There does still need to be specific structure to the inputs, certain required fields, certain optional fields, things like that. And I actually had to shift over to Viewtify to get what I was looking for. So I really wish I had seen this at the time from your March release so that I could have implemented something like this. It seems exactly what I needed.
Yeah. I hope it would have met those needs. And it's been really cool too, as it started to catch on, we've picked up a lot of things from the community about we want to do this and this. And like I was saying earlier about Vue, one of the things that I love about that ecosystem in general is form maintainers seem to want to go where developers have needs instead of saying, here's a pure and beautiful framework. And And like our idea about this framework is really good. So you should try to conform your pattern to this framework. And obviously Vue has like some dogma about like, you know, or, you know, doctrine about like you should do things this way, of course. But in general, like if the community is really wanting a given feature, they'll implement it, you know, like they will. And like if people are confused about how to use it with Laravel or whatever other framework, you know, Express, like the community seems to do a really good job in like bridging that gap. And I think that's actually pretty unique in open source. It sounds crazy, but I actually think, you know, after doing this for 20 years, it's actually pretty unique in open source. There is a certain amount of like, you know, benevolent dictatorship that happens in these open source projects. And I really didn't want to do that, you know, because I know my use cases for Vue Formulate, but I don't know how you would have used it on your project. And probably like your ideas, as long as we can keep the file sizes small and keep the package size from just bloating, we should try to make it as easy as possible for all of these different use cases. And so Tailwind came directly out of the community because I'm not a Tailwind user whatsoever. Yeah, I mean, I'm not like anti-Tailwind or anti-Tailwind people, but I'm an old schooler in that I actually think that CSS as a concept is really cool, and I actually like the cascade, but I totally get that people don't. And so I wasn't gonna like stand on a high horse on this and be like, no, thou shalt not use Tailwind with this project. So yeah, I mean, we went on a pretty deep dive to make sure that if you use Tailwind with Vue Formulate, your life will be as paved and as smooth as possible. And a lot, and yeah, I wrote an article about it, which is kind of ironic because I don't actually use Tailwind in my day to day. And that, I think there's a lot of people now that are using it with Tailwind. So yeah, I think that that's really cool. And I'd love to keep the package in that kind of a place where, you know, if we see that like developers want to use it in a particular way, we're not afraid to figure out a way to address that need. So yeah, classes are maybe one of the biggest problems with these component first APIs. You know, when your component is bringing a lot of DOM to the table, then it makes it challenging for people to be able to apply classes to whatever they want, you know, because the formulate input's got the label inside of it. It's got help text inside of it. It's got the actual inputs inside of them. It has a wrapper around the inputs, which is used in case you want to do like, you know, pretty select lists or things like that. You often need a wrapper immediately around that one. So it comes with that out of the box. It comes with errors and a list of errors, and all of that markup ships out of the box. So when you need to modify a class on one of those internal elements, you're, you know, traditionally out of luck. So we came up with a really, I think it's really, I'm super biased, I'm mega biased, but a really robust way to be able to target any element within, like any element within Vue Formulate, and say, I want to modify the class on that element. And you can do it with props, or you can do it at a global configuration level, or you can do it with slots. But basically, you get to modify any piece and part within the system with classes, at least. Yeah. So Tailwinder is welcome. Come on in. The water's warm.
Okay. Yeah. I really like how you did this, where you can either use, like you said, you could either use props, you could use a slot, or you could do it at the global configuration. And I think that makes a lot of sense, especially for something like you're saying, Vue Formulate is not an entire component framework of any sort. It's just focusing on form and input elements. And then I think it makes a ton of sense that you can just configure that as you're bringing it into Vue, or as you're using it in a particular location. I think that makes perfect sense.
Yeah. And there's even one other way, which is kind of less discussed, but technically there's like this base classes override that you can do as well. So all of the classes that ship with Vue Formulate are generated by one function, and that function is passed a context object for every element. And it says, basically, give me the proper class for this. And you can override that one base class early on in the system if you wanted to, and basically replace all of the internal classes for Vue Formulate, like with one function. Mm-hmm. And the reason that's valuable, and this is the area I'd love to see start growing out, is you could write a plugin, because ViewFormulae supports its own plugin format, that would basically let you write an entire theme with one function. Because if you know, you could have a Tailwind theme for ViewFormulae that's written with one function, and the plugin just overwrites the internal base class or base class function, and then you would basically be able to apply whatever classes you wanted to across the board. And you could, I mean, somebody could offer up, you know, their own little theme libraries using Tailwind to the general populace. And then you could still, because it's the base classes, all of the other methods for overriding classes, like the props and defining classes globally, are still available as only overrides. So if you wanted to like install somebody's Tailwind theme for ViewFormulae, you could do that and then just modify a few classes here and there and make it work for your particular use case, and you'd be off to the races. So far, there's only one default theme that ships with it, and it's, you know, a SaaS theme, and you can come up with your own if you want. And I think most people are going to do that. They're just going to come up with their, you know, every website's designed a little differently, and so they're going to just write their own styles. But I would love to see like some people start writing, you know, plug-in themes. You just like one line npm install, and you have a whole different theme for all of your form fields. I think that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Back when functional programming was making its resurgence, I found it really interesting that a lot of people were moving over there, and it almost felt like it was on hype. And I didn't really understand the power of functional programming until I learned Elixir. Elixir is a functional programming language. It's built on the Erlang virtual machine, and it really does some interesting things and makes you build apps in a different way. But what's really fascinating about it is the speed of the applications, the ability to distribute work easily, and just how it manages the functional programming and all of the nice things about it, so that you don't have to worry about side effects and a lot of the other things that come out of functional programming. Plus, pattern matching in Elixir is a killer feature. If you're looking for a new language that you want to learn that is going to make a difference for you and give you the opportunity to challenge some of your thinking and find a new way of doing it, Elixir is a great way to go. And we have a podcast now on Elixir called Elixir Mix. And you can find that at elixirmix.com.
I could definitely see that being a market, if you will, for an open source set of plugins.
Yeah, that'd be fun. That'd be fun.
Yeah. So I've got a quick question. Well, maybe not quick. You said there are two components. There's the formulate form and then the formulate input. Sure. What is the difference between a formulate form and just a regular form HTML element? I think we've established that the formulate input is really powerful and has all these additional DOM elements and structures and validation. What does the formulate form do?
Yeah, good question. So the form is, it actually does render a form input, but it comes with, its calling card is that it has model binding. And this is another pretty unique thing I think about it, is it actually has a genuine V model on the form. So you can say V model on your formulate form, which is the wrapper, and then inside you have a bunch of inputs, and V model to some local data attribute, or I suppose you could use Vuex if you wrote some getters and setters. And that V model will collect all of the input data for all of the inputs inside of it in a single object. So you just wrap a bunch of inputs, you put a V model on it, and now you can read from literally all of the form fields as they're getting typed out in real time. But on top of that, and this is its real superpower, is a V model is a two-way contract, and it actually does support two-way writing. So not only can you collect the values that are coming out of the form, you can mutate that object and it will mutate the values of the input on the inside of the form, which is super powerful. So that's kind of its probably like most powerful feature. But then obviously it also helps with submission, form submission and stuff like that. So, you know, out of the box, it has a submit event, which by default prevents defaults on the native submit, and checks validation on all of its children to make sure that all the fields have validated properly. And if they've all validated properly, then it calls your submit listener function with a cloned copy of your form data. And we clone it right before we hand it off to you So if you want to mutate it before you send it to your API, you can do that and not actually modify the form values that are in there since it has two-way binding. So yeah, you just get handed this like nice little object with all your form values. And then the assumption is right now that you're using Axios or whatever to fetch to communicate with your API. And that's the way it's written. Although technically you can just call submit on the form and submit it the old school, form encoded way.
Right.
So that's the main thing that forms do. But of course they have a few more superpowers than that. One of them is this concept of naming forms. So you can, any form that you have, you can give it a name prop and just call it, login or something like that. Mm-hmm. And that will actually globally register the form. So you do have to be careful that you don't conflict your form names across in your project. So if you've got a login form, hopefully you only have one login form, or call it something different in the other place you have it. Mm-hmm. But it will globally register your form, and then you can communicate with it from anywhere programmatically. So you just use, $formulate. You can say reset, you can say submit, you can set the values of the form explicitly. You can call all these features. And because it has a way to read and write to all of the inputs inside of it, it can actually modify and mutate your form dynamically from anywhere in your application.
So is that using something like an event bus to send the communication back and forth? How does that work?
Kind of. So it uses the instance of the plugin.
Okay.
And the plugin itself receives the registration. When you name it, the formulate form tells the plugin, hey, I'm here, listen for things that are for me. Mm-hmm. And that way, when you call $ on it, it already knows you call $ formulate and you say, I want to reset the login form. It knows where the instance of the login form is in registry and it's able to go communicate with it. So it's not technically an event bus, but it's not, terribly dissimilar mm-hmm. on that concept anyway.
Okay. But
it's all nicely encapsulated. So you don't actually, as a user, you don't get access to do that. You only get access to the methods that are exposed, handle reset, set values, and submit. So that way you don't have some of the other problems that are typically associated with event buses.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. The other big feature that it has that comes from named forms is the ability to handle backend exceptions. So if you get this is my least favorite part about forms by far. Like composing them is one thing, but then trying to display the right error message on the right form element when you get it back from the backend is 100% of the time a pain.
Yes, definitely.
Every single time.
I cannot argue with that at all. Unless doing it for a client, I typically just show a terrible error and try not to think about it when I go to sleep.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Well, I wanted to like help developers sleep better at night. Cause we all know implicitly you should put the error message for what went wrong on the input that made it go wrong.
Right.
But doing it is such a pain that we don't. Right. And so like we come up with all these horrible user experiences. Like we put a big list of errors somewhere on the page, maybe at the top, maybe at the bottom, wherever. But it's always a bad experience. So yeah, I wanted to be able to like have a function that I could pass all my errors to, and then somehow it would magically make those errors appear on the right elements. And so that's what the error handler does. So the way that I write my forms of ViewFormulate is I compose my form in my template block, and then I have a submit handler, and I usually use async await because I can do a try catch so easily there. So it's really easy to catch when your form fails. So I put a try catch around an Axios call or something like that. And in my catch, I get the response. I look at the response body and I take the response body. Well, actually, I don't look at it. Without even looking at it, I take the response body and I call formulate handle and I pass the error into it. And I do that for all my forms. So in my submit handler, I have basically, what is it? Try, Axios, catch, and it's like five lines of code. and all my submit handlers, I put 5 lines of code, and they all call the same handle function. Because the reality is that on a given project, you're probably only talking to one backend. Sometimes you might talk to 2 backends, but usually you're only talking one. So you're talking to your Java backend, you're talking to your Laravel backend, whatever. And that backend is typically going to respond with something like, you know, if there's a problem with validation, it'll respond with like a 422. And usually it comes packaged up with a bunch of errors, like an object of fields that errored, and then an array of error messages along with each of those. Something like that. Everybody's is a little bit different. So what you do then is you write the handler for that kind of error payload. So if the error payload is, you know, a object with the keys being the name of the field and the values being array of error messages, if you're lucky enough to have that be the case, then it's already done for you. But that's basically what you need to get your errors to comply with. So as long as you can output that as a return value from your error handler, then you globally register that error handler with ViewFormulate, and all your errors for all your forms will be taken care of. ViewFormulate will find the field inside your form that matches that error, and it will explicitly assign the backend validation errors to that input so they show up in line, all your context objects update and everything. And it's just kind of done. So
that is awesome.
It's a win, man. It is a win. Like, go develop, team developers, sleep at night, you know? I mean, seriously, it is a huge weight off my back to be able to use that. So that was one of the like most important, really early features to roll out. And again, coming from a bit of a Laravel background, it's slightly catered towards the error messages that come out of Laravel. Like, you almost don't have to do anything if you have them coming back in that format. But even if it's some totally obscure format, you just need to write a very simple translation process, and the docs kind of detail what that is. Yeah.
Are you able to override that yourself if you need to on a per component basis or per form basis? I mean,
you can, because you still have to call handle explicitly.
Okay.
So you can't override the handler, although it is your own function. So because it's your own function, you could just write a little if statement in there to do something different in a particular use case.
Yeah.
But you can also pass the errors to the formulate form as props. So if you just have a bunch of errors that you want to pass to in all of the inputs in a form, there's a prop called form errors, field errors. I can't remember. Something like that. And you pass it in, and it'll match up the names of your elements with the form the error values that you passed in, and it'll display them on the appropriate inputs. There's also a concept of like form errors. So occasionally, you actually do want to show that like global, hey, the server broke, I can't accept your form submission right now. Mm-hmm. And those are not field errors or input errors. Those are form errors. And there is a way in ViewFormulate to also have those be rendered in the handlers. So that's just like, you just give it an array and it'll show those wherever you want. Mm-hmm. And that's where we actually lie through our teeth about there only being 2 inputs. There's technically 3. there's an input, or sorry, 2 components. There's a component called formulate errors, which you can drop anywhere inside of your formulate form. And if you have form errors, which again are those global errors, it will render in that spot. So if you want them close to your button, you can put it down there. If you want it at the top of your form, you can put it there. If you want to have it pop up in a modal, put it, I don't know, wherever you want your modal to be at.
But you still have that control of where to put it by having it as a separate component.
That's right. Yep.
Cool. That's awesome. So before we wrap up, we are approaching that time. Mm-hmm. I want to hear about form generation, because you've said that a few times. And I know what it is already, because I read your introduction to it, and I've read the docs. But
yeah,
this is really exciting to me, and I would love it if you could share that with us.
Okay, it comes out of the benefit of this component first API, because we have a single component that can render any type of input. Technically, you could generate a form by just doing a for loop over a formulate input, and just V-binding props into it. So that's actually a way that we describe in the docs. If you want to generate a form, you can just have a formulate input with a V4 on it and then loop through like an array of objects where the objects are the props that you want to pass in. So one of the props might be type, and then it could be a text or a checkbox or whatever. And so you can actually generate a whole form that way. However, we do have this schema-based form generation, which is a really robust way to generate forms based off of a really simple schema, which could be represented with JSON. It could be represented by a simple object. And it is literally just an array of objects. And that array of objects are the props, so very similar to what I just described. But you can also have children inside of it. And you can also define what type of component you're using. So if you were using your own custom components, like you have some component that capture component or something, well, vFormula is not going to do a capture component. So you could just say, I want to render in my schema a component of type captcha. And assuming that you've globally registered that, or registered at least where it's being rendered, it will render that when it renders the schema. And so you take this object, your schema object, and you pass it to a formulate form, and voila, it renders all your inputs and everything inside of it. But you can use it to render anything. Like you can use it to render, you could technically render your whole website using one of these schemas, because you can define HTML elements as components. You just say component div, component UL, and then what children go into it. And the children is just a simple recursive object. So inside of that, it would just be an array of objects with props. And then you get all of that kind of for free. The cool thing about it is because the formulate form accepts the schema, you can vbind right on the formulate form and then talk directly into that form. Or you could name the form and manipulate it through the named functions that we talked about, like resetting and setting values and giving it errors and all of that kind of stuff. And it's also pretty cool because it comes with components. So there are a lot of form generators and other types of generators in the Vue ecosystem, but most of them are like bring your own component, which totally has a valid use case for people. But often, like, you don't really want to recreate a text input. And yeah. So it's awfully nice that like this comes with all of Vue Formulate already behind it. So you just define it. And if you're using a Vue Formulate type, you don't need to define the component. You don't need to say like component formulate input over and over again. You just say, this is a type, this is the label, and here's the validation rules, and it'll just generate your form. So the big use case here, of course, is people who want to store a form in a database. You know, you want to have a form builder where you let your client architect their own form. You just store that JSON in a database, give it to Formulate Form on the front end, and you've got a form. Yep.
And that way you could even integrate it with something like WordPress. If somebody wanted to write a plugin for a combination of Vue and Vue Formulate, they could build their own form in WordPress and then save it to their database. And it just renders when it comes up.
It just renders. And that would be really cool. You should do that.
I'll think about it.
I would love to see some people come up with clever ideas. I'm sure we'll see it eventually, but you know, it's only been out a few months. So,
right.
Yeah, that would be really cool.
Yeah. No, this is awesome. I saw that feature and was like, oh, this is nice. I can think of all sorts of things I can do with something like this.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah. If there's, there's a little like playground on the docks. If people go there, they can like have a live JSON field they can just start typing into and kind of seeing what the generated value is right next to it. So yeah, I think that feature kind of sells itself. Of course, you don't need it if that's not your use case, but
right.
if you got to build a form builder, man, I would use it. I mean, super biased here, but
sure. I think it's okay to be biased though. It's your plugin, right?
Yeah, I'm not short on opinion. That's for sure. Yeah.
I mean, the other major benefit I see to something like the form generator is some people may find it easier just to read the JSON structure instead of having to go through a template.
That's true, so. Actually. And I've actually seen that in the issues coming up is people preferring to write their forms that way anyway, which I had never considered as a real use case. But yeah, I mean, it kind of makes sense. Like if you just want to write your forms that way really easily, I mean, you could store your forms then in Vue.x if you wanted to, and that way you could easily render them in different locations or things like that. There's definitely some other benefits of doing it that way. Oh man, there's one other thing I need to talk about before you wrap up on me.
Go for it. I just want to share one more idea on the form generator, because I'm super excited about this. So this feature, the form generator, is just makes me really, I can just explore this as much as mind will go. So the other idea I had is I worked on an application where you needed to have a variable amount of rows in a data input. So mm-hmm. it could be 5, it could be 10, it could be 20, it could be 7, something like this, yeah. where you're, instead of manipulating, like I had to change a number and then iterate over that number to generate the right number of fields, something like this, I could literally just add in another row straight yeah. into the form, and then it just That's renders true. and maps everything out to the, like you have the V model on the form, all the inputs. That's right. I don't need to worry about all of that. I can just say, okay, now add another one of these. Now add another one of these.
That's really, you know, that's interesting, because the feature I was about to jump into was groups, which is a really powerful thing that ViewFormulate has. But the idea, that's actually a common use case that I'm seeing, is people want to render rows of fields. And I have not actually thought, until you just said that right now, that the generator might be a really good way for people to handle that use case. Huh. Very interesting. Yeah, because it is reactive. So all you need to do is mutate that schema to get more things to render. Mm-hmm. Good idea.
Something to play with.
Good idea. Yeah. So there is kind of a way to do what you're talking about in ViewFormulate already, which is groups. Mm-hmm. And without exception, ViewFormulate ships only with native inputs. So unlike a lot of the popular UI frameworks that have like tag inputs and autocomplete selects and stuff like that, we are hoping that we see user lands pick up those use cases better. And sure. all of the inputs that ship right now in the core are all the native inputs. So I think we have every native HTML input accounted for, but I could be wrong. But we have one which is, I guess you could call synthetic, and that is a group. And it is just a formulate input. You call it type group, but instead of it just being a self-closing tag, you can place whatever you want inside of it. You can place HTML inside of it. You can place more formulate inputs inside of it. And when you do that, it takes all of the information that's in it. So like, let's say you put a formulate input in there and takes it, whatever's in that default slot, and it allows it to become repeatable. Hmm. So you can just put a prop repeatable true on your group. And now it comes with an add new button and a remove button. And you can just add as many of those as you want. And you can have as many inputs as you want inside of your group. And they mm-hmm. all get bound into their own object and stored in an array under the group name. So if you want to have Ooh. Like, you know, ticket prices or, you know, attendees, that's the example we have in here. Right. Or, you know, any other kind of thing where you want to have like repeatable fields, you can do that just by wrapping it in a group, and you automatically get an array structure for subfields, which is another huge pain point that I've experienced in the past with forms, is this idea of like, your form can be beautiful, and then a client comes and is like, yeah, but I want them to be able to add like two more social media links if they want to. Like, yep. No!
yep. That's exactly what I was thinking as you were describing it. Yeah.
Yeah, now I've got to have like an array structure, and I got to somehow figure out Yeah, so in this case, you would just wrap it in a group, and you're done. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, groups are another sneaky cool feature, I think.
Cool.
All right. I have talked your ear off about ViewFormulate. Thanks for putting up with that.
No, I am excited about this library. It's really cool.
Great.
Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where can people find you online if they want to continue this discussion?
So, ViewFormulate.com is the docs, and that's an easy way to get started if you want to talk about that. Me personally, I am on Twitter at JP Schroeder, Schroeder. Although I have not been a good Twitter person, so like I don't really have any followers. Although I'm trying to get better about it. I'm trying to actually talk to people about things. So I'm working on it, but yeah, you can follow me there.
All right. We'll make sure there are links to all of that in the show notes as well.
Awesome.
Cool. Thank you so much.
Hey folks, this is Charles Max Wood, and I just launched my book, The Max Coder's Guide to Finding Your Dream Developer Job. It's up on Amazon. We self-published it. I would love your support. If you want to go check it out, you can find it there. The Max Coder's Guide to Finding Your Dream Developer Job. Have a good one. Max out.
At this point, we'll move on to picks. For those who aren't aware, picks are things that we think are cool. They don't need to be tech related. It's just things that we like and we want to share with the community. Justin, you have been, as you said, you've been talking most of this time. So I will go first and then I'll let you share your picks. So my pick today is a children's book. If you've been listening to the show since I became the host, you know that I pick children's books because my daughter enjoys hearing them. So it's what I do. And today, the book that I'm sharing is titled Granted by John David Anderson. The basic plot, I'm not all the way through it yet, but the basic plot is there is this haven of fairies that need to go out into the world and grant wishes. And there's an entire guild of granters that need to that are trained and honed in going into the human world in the 21st century and surviving all of the difficulties and being able to grant these wishes. So this one follows a particular fairy. It's her first time going out, and it doesn't go so well. So it's a very interesting story. It's just kind of fun just watching this different take on the same idea of fairies granting wishes or something. I really like how it brings all of that together.
That's granted, actually. Yeah. How can you get giving a wish to go wrong? What did they do?
What happened? I mean, I'll reveal one small bit just for fun. This fairy got a little arrogant about following rules and restrictions, and so she went up far too high in the sky as she was flying to her destination and nearly got clobbered by a jet. So starts there and it just goes downhill. So it's kind of fun.
A good realistic book for a 4-year-old.
Oh yeah.
Don't fly too high. You will get hit by a jet.
Don't fly too high. Yeah. I'll be honest. At some point she was like, don't know if this, I'm a little scared. I'm like, it's okay. They'll be fine. But she's really into it now. All right. So Justin, what are your picks?
All right. I got two. First one, super softball, Disney Plus Hamilton. It's amazing, right? I never saw the show in person, but if you guys have not watched the Disney Plus Hamilton, you should just put your things down and go watch it right now. That's a softball. My like insider cut right now is this really cool podcast called The All In Podcast. And it's by basically like a bunch of successful VC, Silicon Valley VC type people. But it's interesting because they just have a different perspective than the mere plebes of the earth. and it's not like VC worship or anything like that. It's just interesting to hear their perspective, especially like with coronavirus and all this stuff that's going on. So it's got Chamath, who's a former, he's like one of the former Facebook VPs who's now kind of, pseudo anti-Facebook, some early Uber investors, Slack investors, people like that. And they just sit around and talk about the current events in the world, basically. And it's pretty fascinating.
Interesting.
So yeah, it's a brand new podcast too. So I've been really enjoying it.
Cool. Do you have a link to that one? I just did a search, but I'm finding a few different podcasts titled All In.
Yeah, I'll send you one.
Okay, cool. We'll get that in the show notes for everyone. Sounds interesting. Awesome. Once again, Justin, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you. It was a blast.
If you enjoyed this episode, please let us know. We're on Twitter at @ViewsOnView or at ViewsOnView.com. or devchat.tv. I am at Yagabush on Twitter, so you can also reach out to me there. Hope you enjoyed this episode and have a wonderful week. See you next time.
Bandwidth for this segment is provided by CacheFly, the world's fastest CDN. Deliver your content fast with CacheFly. Visit CacheFly.com to learn more.